I still believe that the factories 10 years from now will be quite a complicated place. Because if I look at the CNC part that I used to work with, I think the average life cycle of a CNC machine is 25, 30 years or something like that. So from that standpoint, a lot will look the same.
You are listening to the Future Proof Operations podcast. The manufacturing sector is evolving, and the work that happens on the front line is the key to driving future readiness. On each episode, we bring you conversations with global leaders in industrial companies. Our goal is to discuss trends, stories, and people in digital manufacturing, and offer the latest insight into solutions. Subscribe and be sure to check out our website for more resources at operationsone.com. I'm your podcast host, Benjamin Brockman. This episode is brought to you by Operations One. Operations One is the leading platform to bring operations to a new level of excellence. By supporting frontline operations from planning to execution to analytics, companies benefit from an empowered workforce, increased operational excellence, and future-proof operations. Visit operationsone.com for more information. Hi, Matthias. Welcome to the Future Proof Operations podcast.
Hello, Benjamin. Great to be here and thank you for having me.
Yeah, great to have you on the show. I'm looking forward to our conversation. Before we start, Matthias, can you tell us a little bit more about you in a nutshell?
Well, I've been a CIO for, I think it's almost 15 years now in total, with various manufacturing companies, mainly from the Sandvik, call it sphere of companies. So I've been the CIO for Sandvik Korman. And Alleima, which I'm currently a CIO for, is a spin-out of Sandvik. So it used to be part of the Sandvik family and now it's a separate company. Before this job, I also had the opportunity of being the president of a division called Sandvik Design and Planning Automation, working with industrial automation softwares. So that's my background.
And what is your current company, Alleima, doing in particular?
Well, Alleima is a world-leading advanced materials company. So what we're doing is high-value added products in advanced stainless steel and special alloys, as well as products for industrial heating. You can say we have a strong market position across a wide range of niche end markets. The strength of our company is the fully integrated value chain. So from the R&D side all the way up to a finished material. And we serve industrial, oil and gas, chemical, petrochemical, industrial heating, and of course also hydrogen and renewable energies as well. So that's us. Essentially, we are in high value-added products, high alloy products.
And did you have the passion for manufacturing companies already from the very beginning, or was it more about your CIO part and then you came to manufacturing randomly?
No.
How was it?
I actually started my career at Ericsson, the telecom company, in manufacturing. So I've been in and around manufacturing almost, I think it's getting close to 30 years now. So, and I had the opportunity of working with GEMS processes, ERP rollouts, and events like that in the context of manufacturing the whole time. So I think I've been naturally drawn into manufacturing and sort of stayed there. I think it's an extremely interesting place to be in.
Okay, Matthias, today we want to talk about the challenges in manufacturing and the different kind of challenges which you probably discovered in the last years. What are the most critical challenges from your perspective within manufacturing?
Well, I think there are two distinct areas that are a big challenge for us and maybe more challenges coming ahead. But the two things that sort of spring to mind that I think is all over is, first of all, the challenge to attract and retain talent. I think that's even more sort of present now than maybe 10, 15 years ago. We know that we have a workforce that is, in the US, they call it the silver tsunami. We will speak more about that. But there is a sort of big part of our workforce that is going into retirement. And how do we make sure that we backfill with young, talented people and attract them into manufacturing? It's an industry that we both think is extremely interesting. But I think we have a work to do to make people come here and learn the trade, so to speak. The second part is, I think, that the complexity. If you look at manufacturing and a traditional workshop, usually you have technologies from the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the noughties, and going on. So just the magnitude and, how should I call it, the magnitude of challenge of integrating all of these different technologies to each other and making sure that we can use the data, I think that's the second big challenge that we are facing. And, you know, in manufacturing, it's not like we greenfield everything, right? If we have a machine that's working, we're not going to swap it out just because we want to have a new PLC integrator and be able to feed data into an MES system. So I think from that perspective, just the magnitude and the variety of technologies that is present in manufacturing is another challenge, especially when we talk about digitalization or that type of automation trend that I think is coming on stronger and stronger.
So we are talking about two challenges, the lack of talent or a silver tsunami, like you called it, and in general, the complexity within the factory, having in mind which kind of products are being produced and having in mind which kind of technical infrastructure is in place in the factory. So let's tackle that two challenges step by step, and probably somehow we can draw a line between them. If you are talking about the silver tsunami, is it just a European thing, or probably from German perspective, we talk about it very often like it's just a German problem. But as you said in our preparation call already, it's probably even bigger.
Absolutely. I mean, my experience is that it cuts across all geographies. It's not a European issue. It's not a US issue. I think it comes to light in every geography. And I think I think it's probably other underlying factors rather than geography. I think it's more of a trend. I think the challenge with manufacturing is that it's been seen as something that's a little bit, let's call it, dirty operations. It's heavy work. There's a lot of tradition in there. It will take time before you learn the trade fully. And I think right now we're in a situation where Gen Z is coming into the workplace. And I think everyone is eager to create their own career and do that a bit more rapid than take 5-10 years and learn how to be a specialist on a specific machine. So I think there is a trend of people being a bit more wanting to have fast results, essentially. And I think there it takes time to learn manufacturing because there's a lot of complicated technologies in there. So somehow the people, we who are in manufacturing, part of our job is to make it easier, to lower the boundary conditions, to make it easier for new engineers coming in and finding ways of learning the trade. And there, I think, hopefully, possibly the other trend of automation actually can help. Also, things like how can we digitalize work instructions? I've seen a couple of use cases in my current job where they've created digital twins of the production environment, which I think is just a great way of lowering the entry barriers and the understanding of the process flows and the machines, and which I think will be a leapfrog in terms of shortening the time for an operator to become more valuable. So reducing complexity is a very short answer to a previously long answer.
So what I understand, Matthias, is that you say the young people are changing. So the generation is changing. They want to have faster results. Probably they are much more focusing on individualism. And that might seem like a trend which is not changing or not stopping, at least not in the next years. So the companies need to adapt. Is that right?
100%. I don't think that trend will change. I think it's here to stay. And as you say, I think it's more the companies. We need to find good ways of onboarding people and making sure that they, as fast as possible, feel valued and feel that they can advance in the career doing more and more complicated operations.
And which kind of initiatives and measures did you already implement, or what kind of projects do you have in mind to counteract?
I think there's a few. If we look at the shop floor as such, as I said, we've already now done a few initiatives with digital twins, which I think is a great way just to have sort of driver licenses for different parts of an operation, getting to know the machine without being able to actually causing any troubles. But also we had a trend of gamification, which I think is still there. I think the digital twin setup is just a great way of sort of using the same tactics and methods that the gaming industry is using to make manufacturing interesting, fun, and inspiring, which means that when you've gone through that training program, you're much, much more ready to go to the actual physical location. Because I think as part of the reason why manufacturing is fun is that there is complexity, but also if you get it wrong, there could be serious damage. So safety is extremely important, which means that you need to have well-trained operators in any type of scenario.
If we make it very concrete, does it mean that the work environment in general could be more flexible for the younger generation? When you, for example, talk about digital work instructions or digital twin, I could assume that somebody could use his iPad still sitting on the couch at home and doing some training and then going after lunch into the factory and doing their job. So even the remote culture could be used a little bit more in manufacturing.
Yeah, but absolutely. I think we are seeing that trend already now that the remote culture is happening more and more. And of course, I believe that there is a fundament. If you are an operator, you need to be on the shop floor, right? But I think a lot of the training activities can actually take place outside of the shop floor. I also think it means if you're really interested, want to learn more, the barriers will be removed a little bit, because I think if you use the sort of the digital twin capability, that means that it's up to you how much you want to learn. You have a learning environment that is open 24/7. And if you are interested as an individual to learn even more, then those doors are open. So I think that's a good thing.
When I talk with other people about that lack of talent or silver tsunami, like you call it, I perceive it like there are two parties. The first one is talking about how can we make the work environment more attractive? How can we get the people back in the factory? And there are other people who just say, okay, let's try to automate more and more within the factory. How is your perspective on it? Is it and or in, or how do you see it?
I think as always, there's going to be a mix, right? I think it more comes down to the task you're doing rather than saying you should do it's always this or the other, where I think you need to be close to the machine. You need to be on the shop floor. And that part, I think that will never change. So I think there is a physical aspect that I don't believe you can sort of automate or digitalize fully. If you look at larger component manufacturers, we know that they are driving lights out scenarios where you essentially only have connected factories with fully automated production scenarios. If I look at the industry we are in with Alleima, I think that will take a long time before we are there. Maybe parts of the process can be fully automated and you can run it from sort of remote, but I think there are a lot of operations that still will need sort of somebody there physically to oversee the process. So I think it's a mix. And I think as all leaders, to be successful, you need to look at the task. As I said, certain tasks we talked about, training, I think fits extremely well in a virtual environment, and that we will see more and more. Whereas I think we work with, I would say, quite complex processes, both hot rolling, cold rolling of steel bars and tubes. We have steel mills, and a lot of those operations actually require physical oversight. And I think that it will stay that way. However, I think we will use more and more technology to, of course, have early indications of quality defects in the process.
Matthias, let's focus on the second challenge that we already discussed at the beginning. So it was about the complexity within manufacturing. Why is it a challenge? So is it getting more and more complex in your factory, or how is the situation?
Yeah, I think in general it is. I mean, the whole trend of automation and digitalization means we're adding more technology into our shop floors. And from my perspective, of course, that's a good thing. I think it is something that will offset the first trend we talked about. The more we can digitalize, the easier it will be to hopefully find people that get interested by manufacturing and also maybe offset some of the challenges with the retirement trends that we're seeing. So I think all in all, it's a good thing. The complexity, of course, comes in the integration. And especially, I think all companies with a lot of legacy means probably there is a lack of standardization, not only within factories, but also in between factories. And that is quite the challenge when you want to, I guess, have both a control over your full workflow, but also understand the performance of each of the factories. I would say we are seeing more and more of the suppliers coming back with open agnostic ecosystems on the shop floor, which means that I think everyone is understanding that the future is all about sharing data, not building monolithic systems that keeps the information. So having a good integration layer, being able to share the information, and I think also the entrance of common data platform concepts where you're able to pull information and data from many different data sources and make sense and visualize it and use it for decision making. I think that's the future. But the trick is in the integration. There's a lot of data out there sitting in old systems, old technologies that we want to make use of. And that's not easy.
That's super interesting. I have that discussions again and again where I somehow see a big gap between two perspectives on the same thing. So on the one hand side, we are talking a lot about great new technologies like AR, AI, computer vision, and so on. A lot of great new things, and everybody is very enthusiastic about it, even in the manufacturing space. But on the other hand side, you talk with the same people about what is the current state of your factory, where are the challenges? And this kind of challenges sometimes seem very basic. Like you said, integration, one point of truth, standardization. You talked about legacy systems as well, which are in place, and you need to lift that technology to the same level to be able to have a connected factory. In our preparation call, you talked about one word, and this was process integrity.
Yes.
Why is it that important for you, and what is behind it?
Because I think process integrity takes away, I would say, the variety of the system landscape. If we can focus on having the process robust, whether it's part of a workflow or a larger process, and we understand that process, I think it makes it much, much easier once we want to tap into the data and information connected to that process. So, and that's my experience. Companies that has been successful in automating workflows often have a good knowledge, overview, and understanding of their processes and has a good integrity of their respective processes as well. Because I think it's very easy to get caught up in this. We have system X, system Y, they're not talking to each other, instead of starting with, okay, but what does the process actually look like? What data supporting this process is going to be essential for us to pull out to be able to automate these workflows? So starting with process and the process integrity, to me, is a much better starting point than a system, because the system is actually just a container of the process and the data that is carried through.
And does it mean to achieve process integrity, you need to have a fully connected factory? So being connected on the one hand side on the shop floor level, but on the other hand side, being vertically connected. So basically having the data in your ERP system and then connected down to your shop floor. And this is still the challenge.
I think there's two aspects to it. I mean, one is exactly what you describe, which is more the system process landscape. And I guess using another word, business capabilities, that's sort of the map of it all. What does it look like? There is another aspect that might actually be more important, and that's the cultural aspect. You know, who owns the process? Who is the person with design authority taking decisions on what that process should look like? If that's not in place, you know, the other part will be a challenge, because usually what you're looking for is some sort of conversation with the person that has design authority of the process. So for me, process integrity is both those parts. It's understanding how it's described and how it's sort of coming to life in the system, but also understanding the cultural aspect. Who owns it? Who is the one that has the design authority of the process? When you're doing automation, you will have to do quid pro quos, right? You'll have to take decisions on the culture side of saying, okay, we will not invest this money to reach this level of automation. It's better that we work with work instructions. And then you need to work with the process owner on that. And if you can get those two sides playing well together and taking decisions, I think you can reach a good level of automation.
Considering the fact that we said at the very beginning, this is a challenge, and I assume it's a challenge for you currently as well. How are you working on that topic? So let's take the two points, the system architecture, the system capabilities, and that cultural aspect. You as a CIO right now, what are you doing to work on that?
If I start with the cultural aspect, I would say that what we are doing and what we're going to proceed to do is essentially make sure that we have a handshake between our technology plans and our business strategy. And the way we're going to do that is quite simple, a workshop format where we will reach out to every business unit, and the process has already started. We will sit down together with them in a physical meeting and say, this is your current business strategy. This is the IT plan we have from ERP down to MES and all the different capabilities we have in the business unit. Are these plans aligned? Do we have the right ambitions? In which areas is it essential for us to win? Is it in augmenting our products or driving a customer journey or automating our operations? So that will give us, I think, a really good conversation on the areas where we need to focus on in each of these business units. Once that happened, we already have system roadmaps in place, I would say, that are quite robust. But once we've had those conversations, we will, of course, align them with our system plans and our system maps, making sure that we have a good, solid investment roadmap. We call them technology change agendas for each of the business units, where our system roadmap development ties back to the IT strategy in a sort of fully stringent way. So that's how I'm working with it very actively. And once again, usually the conversation between sort of a CIO and a business leader starts with the system. I try to tend to not talk so much about the systems, but more look at what's the business strategy and how do we make sure that whatever technology investments we do is playing into the business strategy? Because that's when we also need to look at, you mentioned Gen AI, and these investments need to also be put next to each other and say, what will drive most value? Gen AI, I think, will have a huge impact on primarily administrative processes. And if that's the area where we think we have most to gain as a company, then that's where we should start.
Yeah, you mentioned Gen AI already. So taking a look into the future is a great segue for us to come to an end. Unfortunately, we are coming to an end of this episode. So if we take a look in the future and I ask you, what is your vision for your factories 10 years from now? How will it look like from your perspective?
Well, I think first of all, I hope that in 10 years' time, if we talk about these technologies, starting off with that, I still believe that the factories 10 years from now will be quite a complicated place. Because if I look at the CNC part that I used to work with, I think the average life cycle of a CNC machine is 25, 30 years or something like that. Now, that's not an operation we are in. But I mean, if I look at the investments we have in factories, some of our factories has a long, long history. So from that standpoint, a lot will look the same. I think we will have probably very similar flows. We will have many machines and operation steps that we have today. I hope and feel that what I think will be different is that we have a sort of a common data layer that will help us pull information out from each of these process steps, hopefully with a lot of retrofitted technology, which means that old processes and systems can actually come to life. So we can pull out advanced information and analytics from each of the process steps. And by that, we've had the opportunity to drive automation. I think that's where also Gen AI comes in. It will be in that sort of common data layer that we will use generative AI to draw conclusions, not only sort of historical conclusions, but of course also looking into forecasting, you know, what is the customer demand looking like, and making sure that we have compensating our different value steps depending on what we think is a quite robust customer forecast. All of this, I would say, it's not all manual today, but there's a lot of manual need to make sure the information is correct and that the forecast is correct. And all of that, I think in 10 years will be highly automated. And the same goes for things like having the customers involved in the full production of the full process of producing their respective product, so they can have full traceability in each step, irregardless of where it is, and give them, I think, the opportunity also to have a fully accurate delivery date and things like that, which I think today is an area, due to the nature of our business, this is not so easy at current. So I think that's where I see a big difference.
Sounds like a great vision. Thanks for sharing that, Matthias. Unfortunately, we are at the end of this episode, but I'm looking forward. Probably can dive more into that common data layer and Gen AI topics in future. Thank you for sharing your perspective.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for being on the show. Thank you for listening, and we hope you found this episode valuable. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star review. You can find more information and resources at operationsone.com. This episode is brought to you by Operations One. Operations One is the leading platform to bring operations to a new level of excellence. By supporting frontline operations from planning to execution to analytics, companies benefit from an empowered workforce, increased operational excellence, and future-proof operations. Visit operationsone.com for more information.